watching him do this over the last 2 weeks, I feel like it's sort of kind of made me feel similar to watching him get shot, where I actually, where you just like, you can say a lot of things about this guy, but he is not encumbered by the fear of peer review. And he.
The deep, deep corruption that Donald Trump and Elon Musk and Doge have unleashed on their watch. The amazing amount of self-dealing. They're trying to enrich themselves.
We anticipate savings in FY26 from reduction of waste and fraud by $150 billion.
Zach Abraham, wow, a lot going on. If people didn't catch it, we did like a 35-minute in-depth conversation on the tariffs and the stocks, your area of expertise, so people can watch that across all of our platforms. It's already up, so we won't dive into too much of that today. But there was also the news that inflation is down. I don't know what's going to happen with rate cuts for sure. So I want to talk about like maybe the intersection of what's happening with that and Doge. So the inflation dipping, I mean, do we know what to attribute that to?
Yeah, I mean, tariffs.
So that is, okay.
Yeah, so just over the last month. And this is one of the things we're telling people is that, again, the idea that we have to take a little pain, if we want to get inflation in check, right? Like think of it as trying to, rehabilitate a heroin addict, right? So before
that's a very
you go,
extreme example. Okay, go ahead.
Well, it really isn't though, because when you're running $2 trillion deficits that are 7% of GDP, you are a deficit heroin junkie, right? And so the first thing that we have to do before we take you to an inpatient program, we got to get you sober, right? And so that really is the attempt here of Doge. And there's a couple different ways they're going to look at it. So if you look at where we're at right now, you're probably going to be raising now. And to an extent, this is coming on the back of the consumer, right? It's the way it is. But you're probably going to be looking at right now, what is the estimates? You're probably looking at about 100, 200 billion that they're going to raise via tariff income, okay? Now, right now, you are seeing rates move up and people are panicking about that. Here's what I will bet my life on. As this progresses and you truly start seeing economic softness around the world, you will see a return of a bid to U.S. Government bonds, especially if they start reining in that spending, right? And we don't have to make big cuts, but if we can just, on an inflation-adjusted basis, keep spending flat, you're going to see those rates come back in. The other thing that you're going to see, too, if they act stubborn, is the Fed will launch QE again and start buying up the bonds themselves.
QE?
So quantitative easing, right, which is one of the tricks that we used over the last 10 years or going back to 08, 09, coming out of there, is that the Fed wanted to get interest rates low, right? So one of the ways to do that is print a pile of money and go in there and buy the bonds themselves, right? Just buy them yourself. And that will push the yields lower on those bonds over time. So, right, because right now people are like, nobody wants to buy our bonds. And first of all, that's not true. You just had an eye-watering, you had a phenomenal 10-year treasury auction just the other day, where demand was huge, even from foreign investors. People are a lot less likely to want to go in there and buy the 30-year right now, because when rates go up, the longer time you have left on your bond. So if you own a 2-year bond and rates go up a point and a half, that 2-year bond's barely going to blink. If you own a 30-year bond, it's going to get slaughtered. Okay. And the idea behind it is, even if I'm getting less than the desirable rate of return, I'm still going to get my money back 2 years from now and I can reinvest it. If I'm in a 30-year bond, I got to wait on my hands, right? So I got to ride through a bunch of stuff. So two ways Doge is going to do this is Doge isn't tariffs, but tariffs should bring in some additional income. They're going to try to flatten out government spending and then try to issue cuts. And the other way that they're going to be able to do this is when rates come back in, when you get that 10-year south of 4, every percentage point that the interest rates go down on bonds, you're saving something like $100 billion a year in interest expense, right? So if you start adding in, let's say we can get the 10-year south like down to like 3.5, 3.25, which I think is doable over the next 6 to 8 months, and then let's say you're generating $150 to $200 billion in tariff income, you're right there. You're looking at about a $400 billion net savings, right? And then you can add in additional getting rid of some more government inefficiencies and things like that. But I actually think at looking what they're doing, Now, they need to keep executing and things like that. But what you really want to do in an environment like this is you want to trim at the edges gradually and kind of bring the steam out of things overall. And that's why I've said I think you could have a mild recession, but it may not be the worst thing, right? Like you're seeing, nobody's talking about the fact that, yes, that was a bad month in the stock market, but inflation is dropping, yeah. Right? So there are trade-offs. Now, do we want to collapse? You know, that reaches a maximum. I mean, we had no inflation during the Great Depression, and that was for all the wrong reasons, right? So there's a give and take there. But no, what they're doing, is it going to balance the budget in the next 5 years? No, but nobody there. No, that wasn't going to happen. Right? You've got too big of a. You know, I'm going to use more of my analogies, but it's like looking at somebody that's got 10 pounds to burn off before summer versus somebody that's 400 pounds, right? Like it's, you know, you can crash course it and get all leaned up if you're only 10 pounds overweight and you can do it in 30 to 45 days. If you got 200 pounds, it's going to take more gradual changes over time, right? And we're kind of a 400 pounder at this point. There's, you know, there's a lot of fatter countries out there. Speaking of China, they have the other funny thing to be our debt situation. I'm like, oh yeah, if you think that's bad, go check out China.
Yeah, you do have the best analogy, Zach.
Well,
you do. The heroin addict one is a stretch, but I get it. So as long as you've got, you know, this money coming in, spending under control, because I guess I've always been curious, when does Doge have an impact on Main Street, right? Because you've already said that you're not in favor of them doing the Doge dividends, like just mailing the savings out to people. But, you know, how much does Doge need to save us before it's actively contributing to a drop in inflation, to improved economic prosperity for Americans?
You know, I think the way to look at it is, what is the incremental benefit, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not going to be like, you know, everything Doge is doing, it's not like we're going to wake up one day and be like, oh, this is great. But again, they're trimming at the margins, yeah. right? Now, the Democrats try to freak out. They're acting like they're slashing and burning. And I'm sitting there going, you got to be kidding me. I mean, come on.
I mean, they're doing right? mass protests. They had hands off.
Well, I mean, it pays well. I was actually thinking about taking a break from Bulwark for a day or two to go make some money in the protests.
Don't think you'd make quite as much, but you know.
Probably not. Well, and the company would be a lot less, a lot less desirable as well.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you'd last in one of those crowds as a fake protester for 2 minutes.
No. I think they'd probably have me singled out pretty quick. but no, so I think that you can see the benefits. Like I said, I think the most recent drop in inflation had the most to do with the tariffs. But you're going to see it over time. And it's like one of the things. It's kind of like asking, you know, what are the immediate benefits of eating healthier? And like, well, you're going to live 10 years longer, right? And so I think those things will be, I think the best way to look at it is, what is the cost of not doing it, right? What is the cost? And it's not going to be one silver bullet. There's going to be several things. We also have to get some fiscal restraint going. This whole baseline budgeting deal that we've done in DC for so long is so detrimental because everybody's like, well, we haven't raised spending. Well, yeah, outside of the automatic 5% increases every single year,
yeah.
right? So just addressing all of these things in little increments over time, and I would say over the next 3 to 5 years, if they continue on and stay stalwart about it and stick to their guns, you'll see it within the next 3 to 5 years and potentially sooner.
Yeah, and you can start to piece it all together, too. You can start to see, you know, the tariff strategy and Doge and all of these things and what could happen, like you said, if we remain committed and focused. Unfortunately, if it's stuck in 5 years, Trump's not going to be in office. So who is it going to be in office, and are they committed to the strategy or not?
Well, and that's the scary part of this. But as the more I've thought about it, it's also why I support his kind of slash and burn approach more, mm-hmm. because we need to get this stuff resolved. We need to get this stuff put to bed. And we have to also acknowledge that doing the right thing now may cost us an election, right? So we got to strike while the iron's hot, because whoever comes in after him, especially if they're from the left, they're going to probably put a halt to whatever he's doing,
yep.
right? The other thing that people need to remember is fixing this problem will take time, but getting the problem to this point has taken a lot of time too, right? We have been ignoring a massive economic and military threat for virtually all of Obama's deal. I mean, he had the Asian pivot, in 2014, but he didn't actually do anything that addressed any of the problems. So We have been, and what do we know about adults is the longer you avoid problems, the longer you don't address them, they metastasize and grow. They don't get better over time. So part of the reason that we have to take this approach is because we've done nothing for 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. And there's a price for doing nothing. And right now it's, that's why it's so funny that all of this has gotten sat on Donald Trump's lap. He's been out there literally saying for 25 years that we shouldn't be doing this. Right. So nobody sits there and gives him credit for, well, if we'd have listened to him or Ross Perot right out of the gate, we wouldn't be in this mess, but we are. Right. So let's not listen to the people that it's kind of like COVID. You know what I mean? Where we're going to now listen to the people that created this mess, listen to how to fix it.
Yep.
No. You made the problem. Get out of the kitchen, bring in a new cook. Let's start new. You know,
on that subject, I don't know if you saw it. The funniest comment from a politician on any of this stuff in the past week was Chuck Schumer getting up and being like, Trump doesn't think. He just, something pops into his head and he just does it. And on our show, we like rewound to 1988 when Trump was on Oprah saying he was going to do that. I'm like, what do you mean he doesn't think? He's literally been saying for 35 years that he's going to do exactly that. He thought about it longer than you think about anything, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, and because you could see, I'm enough of a wonk and an economic junkie to remember when Perot was running for president, even though I was only 10. And like I said, I grew up in a brokerage firm. So, you know, and we were very politically in tune, my family was. And I remember really being sort of confused because what Perot was saying back then made tons of sense to me. Yet at the same time, I was such a believer in free trade that you were like, well, why won't free trade work out? The concept that I never stopped to think about was free trade won't work out when we're not being subsidized and our trading partners are, right? That's not free trade. That is free exploitation, right? And, you know, it can't be left to stand. And in the beginning, it didn't hurt us because they didn't have enough economic gravitas. And the same is true of China. You could say it about Mexico. I mean, you go down the list. But as they become bigger, right, that advantage that they're taking of us by default becomes bigger and it starts mattering. And then pretty soon we look at the middle of our country, it's been hollowed out. We have an opioid crisis. We've got 7% deficits. We've got $37 trillion in debt. And now you're looking at it and going, we can't keep doing this, right? So I do think he's deploying the right strategy. Am I sure of that? No, but I don't, the flip side of it is, if we don't go about it this way, I don't see any other options. You got to play hardball. You've created this mess and you got to live with it and you got to fix it.
Well, that's the right mindset too. And as I said, with the tariffs, like I'm open to what his plan is, but I'm also open to it failing. You know, I'm open to both possibilities. And I just wish that they could do, especially the work that Doge is doing, without such ardent pushback and anger and stuff over it, because they could get so much more done, I think, if everyone worked together toward what has been a common goal. I mean, you know, we talked about it on the Doge Watch a couple weeks ago. Obama talked about wanting to do these things. It's not a partisan issue to make sure that government is functioning and not wasting money, but now it is. All right, let's get to our Doge Miss of the Week. So this one actually hits a little close to home for me because I have an extended family member who was dealing with some of the changes to Social Security, to the Social Security Administration. And, you know, hearing what they were going through, I was like, that seems a little extreme. And so then I saw this article. I was like, well, I'm glad they're backtracking. So the headline, Social Security abandons Doge phone service cuts amid chaos and backlash. So basically what Doge was trying to do is make sure that they were identifying fraud. Like, who's getting these checks that shouldn't be getting these checks? Is the person they're intended to really the one, you know, who's cashing them? So they were making people come into offices, you know, and not being able to do so much of this stuff over the phone. And, you know, one of the challenges is you got a lot of old people, disabled people, like, who it's very hard to, like, drag their ass into an office somewhere. And how far is that office away? So it does sound like the Social Security Administration has listened to those concerns and is winding back a little bit. I just hope not. I hope they can come up with other good ways to stop fraud.
Yeah, well, look, there's another cruel reality of this, which is perfection is the enemy of progress.
Yeah.
And it kills me how somehow our society, when I think it just goes to the softening of society, like everybody goes, well, if you do that and the stock market drops 10%, that's horrible, right? We're just, we're willing to accept zero pain.
Yeah.
And when you want to get things like this under control in a bureaucracy that governs 380 million people, you're going to get some false positives, right? I was watching the story about the U.S. citizen that accidentally, and I'm sure there's multiple, that accidentally got deported, right? Do you feel bad about that? Yes. But what is the, think, let's stop and think about what the government's job is. It is to enforce the laws and keep the vast, is keep the vast majority of the country safe by via enforcing the laws. You know, how often do we have people that get falsely convicted in this country?
I mean, too, it happens.
Often.
Yeah,
it happens. It doesn't mean we throw the entire judicial system out the window.
Yeah.
Right. Human beings make mistakes. So if our litmus test for public policy is one person being disaffected, okay, that's a ridiculous litmus test.
Yeah.
And do I feel bad for? Absolutely. Should we do everything to rectify the situation as quickly as we can? Absolutely. But does one person getting done dirty mean we shouldn't shore up our borders? That's just, it's just asinine. Well, and it's irresponsible.
What this suggests is they're willing to reverse course if there's evidence they need to. And instead of sort of saying like, that's good, you know, you're looking at these things, you realize this isn't working and you're taking a step back, you know, the media is like, oh my God, Doge, you know, did something it shouldn't have done. And it's like evil, you know, and at the same time, and you make a really good point I hadn't kind of considered, is it's like they're expecting, they're like the left, you know, the anti-Elon derangement mm-hmm. syndrome people, they're expecting perfection out of Doge, but they don't yeah. expect perfection out of our current system. I mean, our current system is very flawed. They're perfectly fine with that. But when it comes to Doge, it has to be perfect.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly haven't demanded perfection out of the welfare system, the Department of Education, the Social Security Department. I mean, now, so it, when it comes to just lighting money on fire and fiscally endangering our entire country, we're fine with that, right? But if we risk, I mean, it's like saying we're not going to go into a war because there might be, you know, friendly fire, or there might be, you know, you're like, yeah, it's, that's the cost of doing things, right? Like it's, yeah, and do you feel horrible for the people that are disaffected? Yeah, of course you do. But it doesn't mean you can't act, right? Like you have to. And the reason they're taking that approach is just, you know, like you said, DTS. I mean, whatever he does, it's going to be evil. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be awful. And now even Al Green, did you see the Al Green's getting in the act. He's going after Trump personally, apparently.
What is he doing now?
Oh, I don't know. He's just
yelling
just
again, really... shaking his cane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Al Green. And I'm like, man, why don't you go sing some love songs? Right? What are you doing, Al? Get back to the studio.
Oh, and gosh. It's
just, oh, God. It's just so hard to listen to these people to talk where I'm just sitting there going, if you were smarter and had a baseline level of knowledge, if you knew better, you'd be embarrassed.
Yeah, right? But the fact that they're not shows that they don't.
They're like little kids.
Yeah. Just to button up this, what's happening here. So there was an internal memo sent out by the Social Security Administration that says that, you know, they've paused these plans to have people come in person, saying they can vet most of these transactions over the phone. But at the same time, the agency will implement a new fraud detecting tool to flag suspect teleclaims. So it seems like they're amping up efforts to flag things that are showing hallmarks of fraud. And then that's when it triggers, like, you've got to come in. And that makes a lot more sense when you think about it that way. So, All right, let's get to Doge adjacent news. I love this. And this is something we've kind of talked about the importance of. I think we've discussed, it's exciting. Doge is exciting in that it's getting people more interested in putting a microscope on government, right?
Right.
So Doge actually came out and said, they on Twitter, on their official X account. I got to stop calling it Twitter, especially when we're talking about Elon Musk. Oh,
I
my God, I can't do it. Doge is looking for help from the general public. Please DM Insight for reducing waste, fraud, and abuse, along with any helpful insights or awesome ideas to the relevant Doge affiliates, which I'm sure there are a lot of people who want to. We, on our weekly show, Undivided, we had on Glenn Morgan, who I don't know if you know Glenn, but he's like a government sleuth in Washington state. He's like a thorn in the side, but he'll dig into all sorts of stuff. He's actually holding.
What's his X handle? Do you know?
Oh my God. We the governed or something. Nicole, can you look at what his X handle is?
I've hooked up a bunch with a bunch of your followers on Twitter and just awesome.
Oh yeah.
Folks.
It's at We the Governed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
At We the Governed.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I think I know who that is.
Yeah. Well, so he had, and I'll play a clip here in a second. He is going around the state holding Doge training sessions. And he's done some of these for years. Like, he'll go and if people want to come in and they're interested in learning how to file public records requests, look into government contracts, he'll teach them how to do that. And it's such a cool skill. So now he's doing it sort of Doge related to look at government fraud and waste. And so he's having all these events around the state. And he's going to teach people how to do this. Here's a clip from our interview that we did with Glenn about the importance of teaching people these skills.
Stuff like this happens, I think, more frequently than people want to accept. And it isn't, it's just human nature. It's not a, you know, it doesn't have to be a partisan thing, really. It's just a logical approach to how people would function in an environment in which nobody's paying attention or cares. It kind of goes back to that Milton Friedman example of what's the worst way to have money spent is to have people who it's not their own money. It's not for them. It's somebody else's and they don't care. Yep. So there's no concern as to what happens. And unfortunately, that's how government really functions. You know, every now and then government auditors will accidentally find something. But I contend that that's usually because those are the sloppy ones that they catch. And most of it just goes by every day, unfortunately. And you know, you look at some of the Doge, the national Doge stuff that comes up, some of it's less obvious than just open fraud. Some of it's just things like those software licenses that government had been paying for, sometimes for decades, that they weren't even opening or using, right? Now, that wouldn't count as fraud under probably any definition. It's just squandering money that nobody's paying attention to. And that kind of stuff, nobody ever looks at that generally.
Yeah. So I love it. I think that this can have a long-term benefit for our state, for our country, to just get people more accountability minded.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to get them to understand too, that because we're doing this, it does not mean that we think government is inherently evil.
Yeah.
What we know is that bureaucracies of any kind are incredibly inefficient. And if we are stewards of any government, one of the first concerns we should have is efficiency, right? I mean, legality, obviously, first and foremost, but after that, it should be efficiency, because we all understand that systems like this in their nature are less efficient. Now, because of the importance of government, we're willing to deal with some of that inefficiency. But when you get to 130% debt to GDP and 7% deficits, you are no longer efficient, right? And so people understanding that, I think, will help them understand that when people like you and I advocate for less government spending and less bureaucracy, it isn't because we hate poor people and kids, right?
Yeah, it's so, I'm just kidding.
It's so we don't end up in a Weimar Republic 30 years down the road, that we don't watch the hollowing out of our entire country, and worst off, it happening because we did nothing, right? And so the more people that can understand, hey, because the liberals love to position that, right? It's class warfare. All they care about is rich people. Let's forget the fact that 2/3 of billionaires vote for them. But right, it's all, and then once you get it, and I've had this experience with several young people where you sit down and have this conversation, there's this moment where they go, oh, you don't hate government. No, it's that you understand the inherent shortfalls and the problems that it's going to have. And you also understand, just like, you know, owning a dog, you're going to have to walk it. You're going to have to feed it, right? Same is true of government. One of the things you're going to have to be ever present of is efficiency, because it's, and why? Because you've got people making political decisions, not monetary or efficiency decisions.
Yeah.
And that's why they're trying to get reelected. They're not trying to make things better.
Yeah. And it's the opposite of hating old people and the poor and kids. Like, no, we love every American. We want every American to be as successful as possible, and the government to help when it's necessary and stay out of the way when it isn't. All right. Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, still bullish on Doge.
Well, yeah, more so every day.
Still bullish on Trump?
Yeah, no, I, yes. And okay. The reason why, like, is watching this happen, watching him do this over the last 2 weeks, I feel like it's sort of kind of made me feel similar to watching him get shot, where I actually, where you just like, you know, you can say a lot of things about this guy, but he is not encumbered by the fear of peer review. and he's taking extraordinarily bold action. And that guy's got a stomach for a fight that I can't believe. And like I said, I can't look at anybody and tell them I guarantee you this will work. But I think it's a shame that for the first time in my lifetime, you've got a president that is willing to take these political risks. And you may not approve of it, but if you really understand the entirety of the problems we're facing and you're an intellectually honest person, you have to admire the willingness to tackle it, because nobody else has been. And as you can see, it's not exactly engendering a lot of, you know what I mean? It's so rare today that you have a politician that is willing to have everybody ticked at him.
Yeah.
Right. And I find it comforting.
As Caroline Levitt said, he has a spine of steel. Spine of steel.
He does.
I really like that sentence. Not encumbered by peer review. What was it?
Yeah.
Not encumbered by the fear of peer review. That's good.
Yeah.
All right, Zach Abraham, we appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.